WNYC Studios is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And for those of you who've been listening to the D-Day 75th anniversary coverage on The Takeaway or the BBC, this hour we'll have more of that at various points later in our program this morning, including a call-in for anyone who is old enough to have a memory of D-Day and a speech excerpt from the archives from President Franklin Roosevelt from that day that's coming up this morning. Also, we'll continue our focus on some of the substantive new bills that might come out of Albany as what's turning into a historic 2019 legislative year comes to a close this month. Today, we'll talk about the bill to strengthen sexual harassment laws. You know, the current law only labels behavior as sexual harassment if it is, quote, severe or pervasive. We will see what the new standard is that's under consideration. And we'll bring in our first guest in just a minute, Brooklyn and Queens Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, who was in the state legislature before he was elected to Congress. So he may have a thought on the rent laws or other things happening up there, but also on some of what's happening in Congress and in the National Democratic Party right now and maybe in the presidential race. One thing is the new Quinnipiac poll from Texas showing five different Democratic presidential hopefuls defeating or within the margin of error against President Trump. And yes, I said Texas. Biden would beat him, according to this poll, as of today, 48% to 44%. And also right there, just behind Trump by a point or two, that's a statistical tie given the margin of error, were Beto O'Rourke and Julian Castro, both Texas Democrats, and also Elizabeth Warren and Pete Buttigieg. Now, in the haze of constant polling, most polls don't mean very much. Maybe this poll doesn't mean very much. We usually ignore most polls, but this one kind of stands out for showing Texas in play. Remember, too, that Beto O'Rourke only lost to Ted Cruz last year for Senate by a couple of points, so this new poll might show a bombshell in the making in 2020. But already a political bombshell within the Democratic field, Joe Biden yesterday affirmed his current support for the Hyde Amendment, the law that prohibits federal Medicaid funding for abortions for women with low income who are on Medicaid. That makes Biden more conservative than the rest of the leading hopefuls on a central issue. Elizabeth Warren reacted last night on MSNBC.
Women of means will still have access to abortions. Who won't will be poor women, will be working women, will be women who can't afford to take off 3 days from work, will be very young women, will be women who've been raped, will be women who have been molested by someone in their own family. We do not pass laws that take away that freedom from the women who are most vulnerable.
Elizabeth Warren reacting last night to Joe Biden. Other Democratic hopefuls had similar reactions. And listeners will open up the phones on this question, among other things. 212-433-WNYC. Here's my question. If you were a Joe Biden supporter yesterday before this news, are you still a Joe Biden supporter today, knowing that it's not just historical support, it is current support for the Hyde Amendment? 212-433-WNYC. For people who are leaning toward Joe Biden, does this change anything for you? 212-433-9692. And one more story to kick us off. Politico is reporting that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Judiciary Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler clashed in a meeting Tuesday night where Nadler pressed Pelosi to begin impeachment proceedings, according to multiple Democratic sources quoted by Politico. With us now, another New York City member of the Judiciary Committee, Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, representing parts of Brooklyn and Queens since 2013, and now part of both Nancy Pelosi's leadership team as the House Democratic Caucus Chair and part of the Judiciary Committee led by Nadler. Congressman Jeffries is also sponsoring federal marijuana law reform as legalization flounders in Albany and Trenton, and he's holding his own D-Day commemoration in Brooklyn today, which we'll talk about too. Hi, Congressman Jeffries. We always appreciate when you're on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Great to be on.
First things first, the 75th anniversary of D-Day. Tell us what's happening in Brooklyn.
Well, you know, this is an extraordinary anniversary in terms of the brave soldiers who landed on those beaches in France and were able to retake France and help turn the tide of the war in Europe. We may be living in a very different world today were it not for America's involvement and, of course, the bravery of all of the Allied forces. Many of my colleagues are over in Normandy right now participating in commemoration services relative to the 75th anniversary. We thought it appropriate to honor the legacy of D-Day here in Brooklyn. We've been able to identify seven World War II veterans, none of whom participated in D-Day, but will be present with us, and we will sort of reward them and applaud them for their service and also honor the memory of that day out in East New York.
According to History.com, 4,414 Americans were killed on D-Day, 4,414 in one day. And it says they took 200,000 German prisoners of war. There were also so many French and British and Canadian and Russian deaths there. It's staggering in today's terms. The number of American D-Day deaths, do you know, is almost the exact same number as American deaths in the Iraq War, which is 4,410, according to the Defense Department, and twice as many on D-Day alone as in the entire Afghan War, our longest war, still going on, around 2,200 deaths. And those, of course, are just American deaths. We recognize that so many more Iraqis and Afghans and others have also died. But still, it's a little perspective on the magnitude of the loss of that time, isn't it?
Absolutely, and it was an extraordinary loss of life, a tremendous sacrifice. You can only imagine, you know, the sense of terror that those young men were experiencing as they were crossing the English Channel, arriving on that beach, being shelled mercilessly by the Nazis who were there to try to hold France. But also, I think it's important for all of us just to remember the courage and the bravery that it took. And many of these people were enlisted soldiers who, in the aftermath, voluntarily decided to join the effort after Pearl Harbor and found themselves subsequently in the European theater. And we know also that there were many Americans who served and died in the Asian theater in terms of the conflict that was taking place with Japan at the time. It was just an extraordinary effort. They defended the freedom of the entire world. I think it's important to remember their sacrifice as we confront issues here at home around the rule of law and the principles of self-rule and separate and co-equal branches of government. These are the things that those young men fought and died for, and we need to continue that legacy through this very moment.
And we'll talk more about D-Day and the anniversary later in the program this morning. Right now, with Congressman Jeffries, we'll turn to current events. And let me ask you about that Politico report that says Chairman Nadler pressed Speaker Pelosi Tuesday night to let him start impeachment proceedings in the Judiciary Committee. You're also on that committee. You're also one of Speaker Pelosi's chief deputies as the Democratic Caucus Chair for the entire House. Can you confirm that that conversation happened?
Well, I'm not familiar with the substance of the conversation because I haven't talked to either Chairman Nadler or Speaker Pelosi subsequent to that meeting. I know Speaker Pelosi is in Normandy right now. I believe Chairman Nadler is at home. I'll see him tomorrow, I believe. But I do know the meeting did occur because the Speaker regularly meets with Chairman Nadler, Chairman Cummings, Chairman Schiff, Chairman Neal of the Ways and Means Committee, Chairman Engel of the Foreign Affairs Committee, and Maxine Waters, who chairs the Financial Services Committee. Those are the six investigatory committees. She's in regular communication with them. Many of us within the House Democratic leadership do so as well, just to make sure we're all on the same page. I think everyone is committed to the principle that in America, no one is above the law, certainly not the President of the United States of America. We need to make sure that to the extent lawlessness has occurred and serious evidence of that has been outlined in Volume 2 of the Mueller Report, that we follow the facts, we apply the law, be guided by the Constitution, wherever that leads. And I know Chairman Nadler is committed to that process. We'll have an obstruction of justice hearing as part of a series that will commence on Monday. And Pelosi and Nadler are on the same page in that regard.
What happens on Monday?
So on Monday, Chairman Nadler has announced that there will be the first of several hearings looking into presidential obstruction of justice. And the witnesses will include both John Dean, who I think will provide a historical perspective on obstruction of justice at the presidential level. But perhaps most importantly, from my perspective, several former prosecutors who I expect to be bipartisan in nature, who were signatories to the letter indicating that were the behaviors outlined in the Mueller report conducted by anyone other than the president, they would have been subject to federal indictment for felony acts. And I expect that on Monday, they'll outline for the American people why they have drawn that conclusion.
What's the difference between that and an impeachment inquiry?
It's a great question. I've been of the view that far too much has been made over what you actually label the House Judiciary Committee's investigative work. Chairman Nadler had indicated months ago that he planned to hold hearings on three things: obstruction of justice, abuse of power, and the culture of corruption that appears to exist at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. This was in advance of the Mueller report being publicly released. So he's simply fulfilling his promise to the American people that we're going to go down this path in evidence-gathering mode. I think there's much that has been made as to whether you call that oversight or whether you call that an impeachment inquiry. At the end of the day, we're gathering the evidence, and we'll figure out where that leads. And if evidence of high crimes and misdemeanors are uncovered, I think that will be presented to the American people, and we will take that wherever we need to go.
My guest is Democratic Congressman Hakeem Jeffries of parts of Brooklyn and Queens. He's also the chair of the House Democratic Caucus entirely, one of the top Democrats in the House at this point, and a member of the Judiciary Committee, as we've been discussing. We have a lot of calls coming in on that Joe Biden Hyde Amendment issue. I'm going to go to some callers right now before we continue with Congressman Jeffries. And again, the breaking news as of yesterday is that Biden announced that he supports continuing the Hyde Amendment, which is the ban on federal funding for abortions for women on Medicaid or other federal health care. And Gloria in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Hi, Gloria.
Hi, how are you? Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure. Were you leaning toward Biden before this?
I was. You know, the bottom line for me, of course, is I'll support anyone who ultimately gets the the nomination in order to defeat Donald Trump. But I was leaning towards Biden. This, however, is a non-starter for me. Women's reproductive rights are so important, and I think the Hyde Amendment is just awful for women of low income who don't have easy access to abortion. And so that I read that this morning in the New York Times, and I was like, well, definitely he's off my list as my first choice.
Gloria, thank you very much. As we invited people, if you're just joining us, listeners, we invited people who were Biden supporters yesterday. Does his coming out for the Hyde Amendment leave you as still Biden supporters today? Gloria in Montclair, not so much. Helen in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Helen.
Yes. Hi, good morning, Brian. I strongly support Joe Biden. I believe he's the best candidate to defeat Donald Trump. I'm a pro-choice woman. Hyde Amendment is not my favorite. It's been around a very long time. But I think Joe is sending a message, and I think it's very brave of him to come out this early in the campaign to say this. And I think he's sending a strong message about to certain supporters and to certain people who may be on the fence. And for them, this is a very important choice. They don't like federal funding. So I'm strongly supporting Biden now and hopefully later. And I hope he's going to be the nominee.
Helen, thank you. Raji in New Brunswick, you're on WNYC. Hello, Raji.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for receiving my call. I'm on the fence about Joe Biden. I think he's a great human being, and you know, I feel like he's the old guard, and probably we need to look for somebody, you know, who is more in tune with society nowadays. However, the Hyde Amendment thing is not something that bothers me. Let me state at the outset that you know I'm a fierce supporter of abortion rights. But I could understand how, since the country is split between people who are pro-choice and pro-life, that people might not want their tax dollars going to support something that they're so strongly against. I was wondering if some other funding means could be found, maybe for Planned Parenthood on the private front, you know, increasing government funding to other services that Planned Parenthood provides. Mm-hmm. So that some of their private funding could be diverted to support women who don't have the means to access abortion.
Raji, thank you very much for your call. And let me turn to Congressman Jeffries on that question. Congressman, I believe that state by state, it's still possible to use Medicaid dollars for abortion, and that does happen in New York State. So a woman in New York State who's poor enough to be on Medicaid can get a government-funded abortion, but it's just with state funds. Can you confirm that that's right?
That is correct, and is one of the reasons why in New York State, low-income women, often low-income women of color, have that opportunity utilizing state dollars. This is a very highly charged issue. I think many were surprised by Joe Biden's decision to double down on this particular position. It seems to me that the overwhelming majority of the House Democratic Caucus supports repeal of the Hyde Amendment. We, of course, face a hostile Senate and a hostile president in that regard. But I believe, one, abortion should be safe, it should be legal, it should be rare. We need to push back aggressively on the assault against women's reproductive rights that we are seeing all across the country, state by state, and in terms of the federal court cases that I believe will soon work their way up to the Supreme Court. And so I understand why people are alarmed when we as Democrats aren't pushing back as aggressively as possible at the tide that we are seeing coming at us in this country.
It's seen as so out of step by so many people who are for abortion rights because of the race and class implications of who the Hyde Amendment locks out from what is still a constitutional right under the Supreme Court's Roe versus Wade ruling. I imagine that you do not support the Hyde Amendment, though maybe you were put in the position for voting for big budget bills that include everything under the sun to which the Hyde Amendment was attached?
Well, that certainly has been the case in the past in terms of appropriations bills in the divided government context where the Hyde Amendment is embedded in it, and the only alternative for Democrats in that situation in the past has been to support a government shutdown, which also is awful for the economy, and we've seen the consequences of that, and we know who gets hurt when the government shuts down. I do think that moving forward, if we're in a position governmentally to repeal the Hyde Amendment, you will see an aggressive effort led by Democrats in that regard, and I expect this to become a critical issue over the next year or so, given the assault that we're seeing state by state on women's reproductive health and freedom.
Right. And so state by state, if women can get Medicaid-funded abortions in New York State, there are obviously many states where state policy does not allow that. So it's that kind of patchwork quilt that's winding up with these extreme anti-abortion laws that are growing around the country right now. Obviously, this becoming one of the major issues, even more of a major issue than abortion rights was before, as we head toward 2020. Don in Lambertville, you're on WNYC. Hi, Don.
Hi, Brian. Joe Biden and I are from the same generation, and I welcomed his coming into the
race
foray to sit for the nomination. But the problem, I'm deeply disappointed. Joe, unfortunately, is still back in the 20th century. And this thing with the Hyde Amendment, that sealed it for me. He's not my guy.
Thank you, Don. We appreciate your call. I'm going to go to Lauren in Manhattan, who has a D-Day comment on this 75th anniversary. Lauren, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me. My grandfather, James Weinert, he's 97 years old. He is a World War II veteran, and he was a paratrooper in World War II. He was the 82nd Airborne 508th Regiment, and his was the first one over the channel in D-Day. He was the fifth man out of his plane. So we're really proud of him and happy that he's still with us.
Has he been speaking to you about any of his memories? Can he recall that himself at this point? What have you been hearing?
He's told some really incredible stories. Actually, in the just past couple of years, as an adult, he started to share some things. But he was an amateur photographer at the time, too. So he's got some amazing photos.
Wow.
He's got an original silk map that they use. He has two Purple Hearts. He's been interviewed by a couple of people, but he is of sound mind, let me tell you. He's smarter than all of us.
Thank you so much for your call, Lauren.
Thanks
and
so much.
We'll take more D-Day calls later as we continue with Congressman Hakeem Jeffries from Brooklyn and Queens now. And Congressman, while President Trump has been in Europe for the D-Day commemorations, he and his administration, as you know, have also been continuing to make news and make waves at home. Yesterday alone, they announced no more of certain services for unaccompanied child migrants, including legal aid and English language classes and soccer. It's an amazing thing to see come out of Washington. No more soccer. And also no more, on a separate issue, fetal stem cell research. And I want to play by way of historical contrast. President George W. Bush, when he first announced restrictions on embryonic stem cell research in 2001. Of course, President Bush was an evangelical Christian, and when he came into office in 2001, this was one of the big issues. The religious right wanted him to stop embryonic stem cell research, and he laid out competing points of view on the issue in a speech in August of 2001. Here's a very brief excerpt of how he laid that out.
Nancy Reagan has written me about President Reagan's struggle with Alzheimer's. My own family has confronted the tragedy of childhood leukemia. And like all Americans, I have great hope for cures. I also believe human life is a sacred gift from our Creator. I worry about a culture that devalues life, and believe as your president, I have an important obligation to foster and encourage respect for life in America and throughout the world.
And then he announced his actual position, which was to allow research to continue with existing stem cell lines, but not with new fetal ones.
As a result of private research, more than 60 genetically diverse stem cell lines already exist. They were created from embryos that have already been destroyed, and they have the ability to regenerate themselves indefinitely, creating ongoing opportunities for research. I have concluded that we should allow federal funds to be used for research on these existing stem cell lines, where the life and death decision has already been made.
President George W. Bush in 2001. Congressman Jeffries, first of all, for people who thought at the time that George W. Bush was a cowboy, he sounds downright thoughtful by today's standards, doesn't he?
Well, that's correct. Who knew that one day we would miss not just Barack Obama and Bill Clinton, but George W. Bush as well, because of the disaster that currently exists at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. I think what we are seeing from Donald Trump is that he continues to put right-wing ideology above the health and well-being of the American people. I think as President Bush laid out in a very thoughtful and reasonable fashion, in terms of stem cell research, it's been critical in developing cures for a variety of afflictions facing the American people, including rubella, and also has been very helpful in developing treatments for people who are afflicted with HIV, will continue to be the case moving forward. And there are a whole variety of other illnesses that are vexing America and the world, various forms of cancer, and of course Alzheimer's disease, which is going to increasingly become problematic for America as Americans live longer and the number of older Americans grows significantly. This could be devastating for the country, and we need to accelerate our research and development in trying to tackle Alzheimer's and a variety of other illnesses. And we need every available means to do so. So this is a reckless decision. He's clearly playing again to his evangelical base, and it's will be hurtful to the well-being of the American people.
And that old Bush compromise was mostly a win for the religious objectors at that time. Is it your understanding, because I'm not clear on this, that Trump is going even further, banning research on the existing stem cell lines, embryonic stem cell lines, that Bush was allowing research to continue on back in 2001?
Yeah, there's still some lack of clarity about it since this was just announced yesterday, but it is our understanding that he is taking it further, and in part by failing to renew contracts connected to ongoing research that existed. The first failure to renew related to research being done by the University of San Francisco that I think had been decades in the making. And so this is certainly, it appears by all accounts, an additional step further and will be detrimental to the American people, and it's quite unfortunate. And we'll look at what options we have available to us in Congress to push back aggressively against it.
And on the suspension of certain services for child migrants being held in detention that was also announced yesterday, the administration position is that there are so many more migrants coming in, the surge continues, the increase month by month continues, that their budget is stretched, and so they have to stop spending money on things that are relatively optional, not for their basic health and safety. So legal aid goes, English language classes go, certain recreational programs, including soccer, go. What's your reaction?
Well, it's an outrageous decision, and there's great reason to be skeptical that this is a decision that is really anchored in a lack of resources as opposed to a political decision connected to Donald Trump's xenophobic behavior and ideology, which has been with him from the moment that he first came down that escalator in Trump Tower in the summer of 2015. Now, if there is truly a humanitarian crisis that requires additional resources that may not exist, I think that is something that House Democrats are prepared to meet. But we want to make sure that if additional funding is given to this administration, that there are guardrails that are put up that severely limit the manner in which those additional resources can be used so that they go to the migrant children, they go to their education, they go to legal services, they go to recreational activities that are important to their physical and psychological well-being, and that the money is not diverted to Border Patrol or to ICE in order to sort of continue Trump's deportation machine. So that's the discussion that is underway in the House right now. We want to understand the legitimate nature of the humanitarian crisis to be sure that this is not flowing from sort of Steve Bannon, Steve Miller, Donald Trump type ideology that's been coming out of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, which is hateful toward immigrants. And if it is legitimate, We want to make sure that there are guardrails put in place so that the money actually addresses the humanitarian crisis.
Tyrone in Vero Beach on Joe Biden coming out for the Hyde Amendment. Tyrone, you're on WNYC. Hello from New York.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm an independent voter. I'm not registered in either party. And here in the swing state of Florida, I know that in my community and where my, I know African-Americans, whites, low-income and high-income, this Biden position will not harm him, and he will even strengthen his ability to attract moderates. I'm pro-choice myself. This issue is being used as a wedge issue by pro-choice absolutists. It's a shame. I think people that are thinking about pulling their support from Biden because of this are people that are losing the view of the long goal, which is get Trump out of office.
Tyrone, thank you. Patricia in Chelsea, you're on WNYC. Hi, Patricia.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you so much for your show. I love you. You're wonderful.
Thank you.
I am a Democrat. I have not really decided which candidate I prefer. I'm not opposed to Joe Biden. But I feel that my tax dollars are used for many, many horrific things that I am opposed to. Illegal wars, subterfuge, to controlling, trying to control other governments. And I don't see why my tax dollars being used for helping women get abortions should be any, you know.
Why should the religious right have veto power over
exactly,
that? If you don't have veto power over your tax dollars going for things you object to.
Correct.
Patricia, thank you very much. Congressman Jeffries, I know you got to go in a minute. I want to return to the hearings that your Judiciary Committee is going to be holding on President Trump's behavior relative to the Mueller report, et cetera. And something about the potential timeline of what might turn into impeachment proceedings. I imagine before those hearings could reach a climactic point, you'd have to fight in court to enforce the subpoenas to testify that Mueller witnesses like Don McGahn and Hope Hicks are currently defying. Chairman Nadler was on the show last week, and he said that could take into the fall. So I'm thinking there's the potential for having impeachment hearings in 2020, maybe simultaneously with Trump's reelection campaign. Do you think it would time out like that? And if so, is that the kind of two-track spectacle that would be in your party's interest or in the country's interest? Or how do you think about the potential of those two things taking place side by side?
Well, I think Speaker Pelosi and Chairman Nadler and the House Democratic Caucus are committed to doing three things simultaneously. We're going to continue to legislate, and we've been passing bills, including the Dream and Promise Act this week, so we can provide a pathway toward citizenship for millions of dreamers who are already contributing in a phenomenal way to the United States of America. You know, we've passed bills on gun violence prevention and on the Equality Act to make sure that there's full equality for the LGBT community, strengthen the Affordable Care Act, protect people with pre-existing conditions. We send in bill after bill over to the Senate, which is turning into a legislative graveyard. But we'll continue to legislate aggressively and raise the stakes in terms of public sentiment to try to get the Senate to do their job. At the same time, you know, we're going to continue our oversight responsibility, which we absolutely need to do, and investigate the misdeeds of the administration, wherever that leads us, without reference to any sort of political timeline, because we have a constitutional responsibility to serve as a check and balance on an out-of-control executive branch. And third, as you alluded to, Brian, we will litigate these issues in court because the Trump administration is stonewalling us, and ultimately when there's a dispute between the Article I legislative branch and Article II executive branch, the courts have to resolve it, and so far we've been winning in court, and we expect to do so all the way through.
All right, so you're saying let the timeline chips fall where they may. Can you give us just a quick thought before you go on new marijuana-related legislation that I see you have? Of course, that's floundering at the state level in both New York and New Jersey right now.
Well, Senator Schumer has been a champion of the Marijuana Freedom and Opportunity Act, and I'm proud to have introduced the legislation with him in the House. We want to do several things. One, most importantly, deschedule marijuana at the federal level so we can decriminalize it as the debates take place across the states. New York and New Jersey, I expect to move in the direction of full legalization. May not happen this year. We'll see what occurs. Simultaneously, we want to make sure that as marijuana is legalized across the country, that communities that have been devastated by the failed war on drugs have an opportunity to benefit economically from this new multi-billion dollar industry. And we want to send that signal to the states, and we want to provide grants and resources in that regard to make sure we can raise up a new entrepreneurial class, mm-hmm. particularly in communities like those that I've represented, Bedford-Stuyvesant, East New York, West End, Coney Island, Brownsville, that were devastated by the failed war on drugs and the aggressive marijuana prosecution.
It looks like Senator Gillibrand went even further just yesterday, proposing full federal legal recreational. Let the businesses flourish in every state. We'd all be Colorado, and the expungement of all the past marijuana records. Are you ready to go that far?
Yes, and in fact, in our legislation, we allocate grants in order to encourage expungement of records for people who were convicted of marijuana possession. And so we're in complete alignment and agreement with Senator Gillibrand and a host of marijuana activists in that area.
But full federal recreational legalization, would you vote for that if you had a bill in front of you?
Well, I certainly would vote for it, and I don't know whether the votes exist or not in the Senate, but one of the things that is important to note, similar to what we were able to do with criminal justice reform and the First Step Act in the last Congress, is that, as you know, Brian, and have pointed out, increasingly this is a bipartisan issue. And we brought together the left and the right, Democrats and Republicans, progressives and conservatives, the Koch brothers and the ACLU, and a whole host of folks to work with the Trump administration on criminal justice reform in the last Congress. We think that marijuana reform may be the next frontier where we can make significant progress. We want to do it in a bipartisan way.
Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat from Brooklyn and Queens, member of the Judiciary Committee and chairman of the House Democratic Caucus. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks so much, Brian.